Welcome to Gracious Words. Gracious Words is taken from the weekly women's Bible study taught by Cheryl Broderson at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.
We behold your glory, God, in the face of Christ. It shows us who you are, revealing who you are.
Timothy was the pastor of the church at Ephesus. Occult and pagan practices were rampant there, but many heard the gospel and were saved. Paul wrote to exhort Timothy to lead, teach, and correct these new believers in the way of Jesus. Here is part two of Cheryl's message titled, The Authority of Leaders.
It's about Jesus. I want you to bring them back to Jesus. I want you to put them on the path of Jesus. You know what? We're in a hot air balloon that's been pierced and we're going down. And we need Jesus. We need Jesus. And so Paul says, I want you to bring these people back to Jesus. It's important to remember that these people came straight out of the occult and paganism, and there were still residual ways and concepts and ideas that needed to be corrected. Timothy was not just to let these people do whatever felt natural. He was to lead them in the ways that were supernatural. And so he had to bring them back to the way of Jesus. Now, some people were telling fables. They were making up stories about Jesus to make Jesus more attractive. Yes, they were making up stories about, I was healed yesterday, when they really weren't. That's what the Apocrypha is. It was made up stories about Jesus. They were claiming to hear things from apostles and people and getting new understandings that they didn't have. When I was in junior high, and it was the hippie time, I've told you this story before, but they took us to Palm Springs, dropped us off, and they said, witness. Now, the only, experience I had had with witnesses, those are people that are witnessing, is when they would tell their testimony. I'm 12 years old. I was raised by Chuck and Kay Smith. They wouldn't even let me sin. Even if I wanted to, it couldn't have happened. I didn't have that kind of atmosphere. So you had to give your testimony. So I walked up to a group of hippies. They were all on the ground. And I just walked up to them and I said, you guys need Jesus. And they're like, what do you know about life? I'm like, a lot. You know, you don't even want to know where I've been. It's dark. It's bad. Ugly. But then I met Jesus. And they're like, what'd you do? Like, pot. Because I was thinking, I've carried my mom's pots from place to place. I couldn't totally lie, you know? Wasn't allowed in my environment. So they're like, okay, what is a roach clip? I said, a roach clip? I said, it's the bug that bites you when you smoke too much pot. Bill Welsh, who's now the pastor in Huntington Beach, he overheard me giving my pseudo testimony. And he came up and he said, he had good news for a modern man. He said, Cheryl, I've got a scripture for you from Romans. It says, if my lie helps somebody to come to Jesus, then should I lie and embellish my life? And I'm like, and then no way. God forbid. He goes, Cheryl, read this out loud. I'm like, oh. He goes, yeah, don't make up your story. Tell the truth. Just tell them how good Jesus is. You don't need to make up a story. They were making up stories because they thought that would lead people to Jesus. Others were delving into genealogies. This has to do with speculative teachings or assumptions about the Old Testaments. This testament, it's when you get into the Nephilim. Oh, I remember a time when everybody was into the Nephilim. Not only were they, you're like, who are the Nephilim? You don't need to know. But these are, okay, they were the giants, you know, that when the sons of God intermarried with the daughters of man, we don't really know what that means. But there's all this speculation that maybe these were the ancient Zeus and Aphrodite and Artemis, all these different deities. There were others that were saying, no, there's still Nephilim around us. This is in the 70s, like there's still Nephilim. I think you're a Nephilim. How do you know if you're not a Nephilim? I mean, but this kind of stuff was going on in Paul's time. He said, get them out of all this speculation. We've got the gospel. We, you know, as Moses said to the people of God, the secret things belong to the Lord. There's a lot of things in the Bible we're not going to understand, okay? Like Nephilim. A lot of secret things belong to the Lord. But the things that have been revealed to us, like the gospel, this is ours. And this we can pass on to our kids. Get out of this speculation. So Paul was telling Timothy, charge them, stop them from speculating and making up stories. The purpose for charging these people is to prevent disputes, comparisons and divisions and fights, to prevent strain from the faith, to prevent worthless talk. Oh, we can get so easily preoccupied and involved with meaningless trivialities that don't amount to anything. We are too easily drawn away from the way of Jesus to the little tantalizing fruit that's all around us. We just are, aren't we? Margaret, thank you very much. She'll say to me when I'm getting off, squirrel. If you've ever seen the movie Up, you know what that means. In fact, if you say to my dog, if you walk in my house and you say to Barnabas, if he's bothering somebody who's coming in the door, I say, squirrel, and his legs move too fast for him. He's got to get out the door and find that squirrel, and he starts patrolling the walls of my backyard. Well, they say a lot of dogs are like their owners. And I can be like, squirrel. And I have to be brought back to the way of Jesus. This isn't just for you. This is for me. I need to remember to keep Jesus the main thing, the main purpose. This is why I do what I do. Jesus. This is the power of what I do. Jesus. This is the authority, what I do. Jesus. Keep Jesus at the center. Timothy is to charge them because of love, because you love these people, because you don't want them to miss out on the love that is theirs through Christ Jesus. Now, the purpose of the commandment is love out of a pure heart, from a good conscience, from sincere faith. The motives are pure. We're not doing this again for the sake of power, the sake of authority, but out of love, out of pure motives, out of sincere faith, because I really do believe that Jesus is the best way. Because I know what happens when someone gets out of alignment with Jesus and how off they can get. One degree will lead to a whole different destination. These people want to be teachers of the law, some of these that are straying. They want to be authorities in the church. They want to be authorities over others, but they're doing it out of the wrong motives. They don't even understand the relationship of the law, of the commandment, that even the Mosaic law is all about love. You see, there are two extremes when it comes to the Mosaic law, and we still use those two extremes. And one extreme is to say, oh, it's old covenant. It doesn't apply anymore. I remember talking to somebody and they said, I want to have a reconciliation. I want a relationship with you. And they called it biblical reconciliation. I said, that's easy. We can do this. I just don't want you to lie anymore. Or slander. And you know what they said to me? Old Testament. We're allowed to lie in the New Testament. I said, no, we're not. Paul says, do not lie one to another, seeing that we have put off the old man and his deeds. And he goes, where? He really felt, this person really feels that by lying, it's kind of like the fables. By lying, he gets people to Jesus. The opposite of what Paul was saying. That's one extreme. The old covenant, we're under the new covenant, or it doesn't have any hold or application for the believer because we are under grace and not the law. Or some people say, oh, the law is bad, bad. It's mean. It just kills you. And all it does is show us how far away from God we were and our need of Jesus. Yes and no. The other extreme is to try to be righteous before God by the law. God, I have been good this week. No lying, no adultery, no fornication, no, you know, so let me in. I deserve it. I've been so good. Or to put our faith in the law. If I'm just obedient, if I'm just good enough, then I will be right with God. If I worship on the Sabbath and not on a Sunday like all those sinners, then I'll be right with God. Or to try to practice the rituals, the dietary laws and festivals prescribed by the law. You know what that leads to? It leads to conceit, doesn't it? And I think I'm better than anybody else. And I begin to then judge everybody by the law. Both extremes are wrong. So what is our relationship to the law? Well, if you look at Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 through 19, famously called the Sermon on the Mount, you realize that Jesus upheld the law and even intensified the law by taking it to the very heart of what it means, that the law is not just to govern our actions, but our attitudes. Do not think that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets, Matthew 5:17-19. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For assuredly, I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or tittle will by no means pass away from the law till all is fulfilled. Whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men to do so shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. What is Jesus saying? Is he saying we're still under the law, that the law is the ultimate authority on our lives? Well, Jesus was accused of breaking the law. Remember, because he healed on the Sabbath? You read in Luke chapter 6 that when Jesus went in the synagogue, these men had set him up. They put a man in the synagogue with a withered hand because they knew that Jesus could not resist healing that man with a withered arm. And we're told that Jesus looked at the Pharisees and the scribes and the lawgivers with anger. And he asked them, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill life? And they didn't answer him. Then he looked at the man with the withered hand and he said, stretch it out. And he did, and it was whole. And then those people who looked to the law to save them went out and they began to plot against Jesus to kill him. You see, the problem is they did not understand the spirit or purpose of the law. And that's what we do. We either dismiss it altogether or we become very rigid and try to live up to it. Sometimes even adding, like the Pharisees, commands to the law, like your dresses have to be below your knees at all times. We add so many crazy laws to the law, don't we? But Paul writes to Timothy and says in verse 8 of chapter 1, the law is good It's beneficial if one uses it lawfully. In other words, the law is good if we understand it and use it as it was meant. You see, the law is spiritual. And what the law was meant to do was to give life, to preserve life, to help with life. And that's why Jesus said the spirit of the law is to save, no matter what day of the week it is. The spirit of the law is to do good and to heal no matter when it is. In fact, at one point, he goes back to the law and said, if someone's ox falls into the ditch, is it lawful on the Sabbath to get that ox out of the ditch? Yes. In fact, if you did not help a neighbor's ox but walked right past it, that was an infraction of the law. The law was given to help men, to get men on the way of Yahweh and keep them in the way of Yahweh so they could be preserved, so they could have the best life on earth experience, to keep away from sin. The law is a manual given for our good, but it's a manual. There are some things with a manual that work and some things that don't. I bought a sewing machine on eBay, but it didn't come with the manual. And that sewing machine was no good to me without the manual. I didn't even know how to thread it. Have you ever misthreaded your sewing machine? Do you know what it does? It creates all these bumps. You have the ugliest seam you have ever seen in your life. And I needed to know, how do I thread this machine properly? Do you know what I had to do? I had to send away for a manual. I had to go on eBay again. And it's like, no wonder the sewing machine was cheap, because the manual was almost as much as the machine. Actually, I was able to download it on another site for free. But I downloaded the manual so I could just know how to thread. It tells me where to oil my machine. It tells me how to get the best use out of this sewing machine so I can preserve it, so I can keep sewing a straight seam, so I can have productivity with this machine. It's all about bringing out the best of my sewing machine, being able to have quilts that do not have oil spots or fall apart because the bobbin wasn't catching that, whatever you call it. Some of you actually sew more than I do and know the names. I don't know the names. I just know the bobbin goes down, it catches, and it makes a seam. In the same way, a manual tells you what to do and what not to do to preserve the life of your car. My car manual tells me what to do when certain icons light up on my dashboard. Now, Brian thinks we're not under the law, so he likes to ignore those icons on the dashboard because he's free from the law, but he has a misunderstanding of the purpose of the manual. Not me. I'm always referring to my car manual. One day, I got in my car and the back windshield wiper was going back and forth, right? There was no rain. And I was pressing every button possible to stop that thing, and it seemed to go faster. and then it would stop for a while. I'd think, oh God, thank you. I pushed the right button. And then all of a sudden, vroom. And then, you know, I press another button. Wait 20 seconds. Vroom. I just think I had it handled. Like, I know what to do. Vroom. You know, I had to go to the manual. I had to look up back windshield wiper, how to turn off. And I finally got it. And then 3 weeks later, it happened again. And guess what? I had totally forgotten how to turn off that back wiper. I had to go to the manual again. You know what? I keep that manual in the glove compartment of my car because I never know when I'm going to need it. I don't even know how to open the engine of my, like the hood of my car. I don't know. I just like my car because it's pretty. I don't know how to open the hood, but my manual tells me how to open the hood. I have to consult the manual. I have to go back to the manual over and over again. Now, my car is almost paid off. Almost paid off. When I pay it off, do you think I can chuck the manual off and out the window because it's paid in full? You think I don't need that manual anymore just because it's paid off? Oh, no. I'm going to need that manual even more because by that time, it will be 6 years old, my car, and it will be lighting icons like Christmas trees. But on the other hand, the manual itself cannot save or preserve my car. If I don't follow the manual, it's not going to do any good for my car at all. You know, just having a manual in the glove compartment doesn't mean I drive better. Does it mean that, you know, I automatically pull in for oil changes when it needs it? Nope. It's a manual. It's up to me. It has to do with my relationship to the manual. Because if I ignore what it says and just think I can do better off and I can interpret those little icons any way I want. No, that little thing that looks like an airplane is telling me I'm doing such a good job driving. I just think of those as encouragements. Keep going, Cheryl, without oil. The manual tells me how to use my car properly, how to help it last, and how to get the best drive out of it so that I can make it to every destination that I intended. So the law is a manual for shalom, or to stay in the way of Yahweh. It's how to live in the way of the Lord as the Lord intended it. That's the law. What is our relationship as Christians to the law? It's a manual. But let me say this. We don't have that same model of car. Okay? So some things work for our model of car. We've got what's called the New Kingdom car, right? And in the New Kingdom car, we can eat bacon. But in the Old Kingdom car, which was for Israel and their nationality, they could not eat bacon. So you've got to know what things apply to the Edsel and what things apply to the Oldsmobile. You've got to know the difference and use it as a manual. There's certain things that do not apply because Jesus is our sacrifice. So we have automatics and not manual gears. We don't use a crank to start up our cars. There's a difference because of what Jesus has done. We're in the new model. But the Ten Commandments and much of the law and the spirit of the law, we're still driving a car, still applies. Does that make sense? Okay, because I can't see your faces because I'm wearing contacts and only lets me read but not see far away. Sorry. Even Brian's blurry on Sundays. It's like, but he looks younger, so it's okay. That's why I think God lets your eyes like get bad when you get older. I'm wearing, like I said, contact lenses because we still look really good to each other. The law is meant to correct the lawless, the one without any standards, the insubordinate, the one doing their own thing, the ungodly, the one who needs to know the way of God, sinners, to know what they are doing wrong, the unholy, that they might learn the way of holiness, the profane, that they might know the way of righteousness and holiness, murderers of mothers and fathers, that they might know the way of blessing, of love and family. That's why the law says, children, obey your parents, for this is pleasing to the Lord and leads to long life.
Timothy's task in Ephesus was not an easy one. The church had drifted. People were making up stories, believing false teachings, and were being drawn away from the truth. Timothy's mission was to bring the church back into alignment and make Jesus the center. He had to take a stand and show them they couldn't keep doing whatever they felt was natural or right. He had to use his authority and lead them with love by the power of the Holy Spirit into the way of Jesus. We hope you have been blessed by today's Bible study. For more information about the Gracious Words radio program and the teaching ministry of Cheryl Broderson, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. Coming up next time on the Gracious Words program, we'll look further at authority and leadership as we continue our series, Letters to Lead, Live, and Love By, in the first epistle to Timothy with Cheryl Broderson. We do hope you make plans to join us. Again, for more information, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.